What you don't know can actually hurt you. According to Nassim Nicholas Taleb, we foolishly ignore the profound impact the unexpected has had throughout history. He joins me now to discuss The Black Swan, the book he's written on the subject. I don't know how much significance I should read into the fact that it's published by Random House, but I am very pleased that it has brought Mr. Taleb to my show today. Hello.
Thank you for inviting me.
So what does a black swan represent?
Well, before discovery of Australia, people in the old world had absolutely no reason to believe that a swan could be of any other color but white. All they had seen up till that day was white swans. And of course, one single observation destroyed centuries, millennia of confirmation. But my swan is not, my black swan is not just a bird. It doesn't have feathers. It's an event.
So give me an example of some black swans that have happened recently, and why do you say that actually black swans are increasing?
The main black swan, I think, in history was the Great War, and it's Volume 2. You know what happened.
World War One,
and of course,
I thought it was the
volume.
iPhone.
You also can add somebody about the internet is a black swan. Google is a black swan. The dominance of a very small number of artists, okay, is a black swan. Okay, it comes with the information age, and at the same time, you can't predict. The whole point is you can no longer predict cultural trends. You can no longer predict who is going to be the person dominating a given culture.
And you mentioned the Harry Potter phenomenon as a black swan. Why was its success so unpredictable?
It's the fact is it's not you have thousands and thousands and thousands of people writing books. A very small number of books tend to be read by everyone. So it's sort of winner take all in the cultural industry because the whole planet wants to read the same book now, whereas 100 years, 200 years ago was very different.
So it wound up actually with a small publisher because the big ones, at least in this country, because the big ones didn't see its potential?
We have a horrible track record at predicting in some domains, okay, and the book business is one of them. Technology is another one. We have a very bad track record at predicting what will work, what will not work, what will stick, what will not stick.
Technology is a good example because when I think of the book 2001 and the movie and that huge computer, which by 2001 would have been a tiny computer because miniaturization had not yet been a part of the computer process Arthur Clarke wrote the book.
I mean, we have, if we look in history, what was written in the 19th century about the year 2000, what was written, again, I mean, you'd be shocked at how many things that did not happen and how many simpler things happened, you see, and took place. But our track record in predicting in some domains, again, I mean, I separate the world. The black swan is not so much about skepticism as it is about knowing where to be a skeptic. And it's pretty much a book on gullibility, where to be gullible. And so there are domains in which they are black swan prone. They're vulnerable to the high impact exception. Again, my black swan is not a bird. It's an exception. And that exception carries huge consequences. So the domains, you know, are economic life, technology, scientific innovation, okay, in spite of all the records, okay, because the records usually are written ex post after the fact, in spite of all the records, it looks like almost major medical discoveries made by accidents, and those that were not, okay, made by accidents, all right, were not definitely the drugs that people were looking for.
Would you call the war in Iraq a black swan? Because many people are pointing out now that a lot of experts predicted exactly what has happened.
The war in Iraq is a gray swan. It was very simple. For someone,
a gray swan.
A gray swan. And that, I have that category of events of large consequences that we pretty much should be aware of, like the Hurricane Katrina was a gray swan. An earthquake in San Francisco would be a gray swan if it happened. The war in Iraq is a gray swan. But there's one thing about wars. We're moving into more and more unpredictable. War and large-scale projects are getting more and more unpredictable. And there are domains, what I call the complex domains. I don't like to use the word complex, but non-simple domains, in which the link between action and consequence started getting fuzzy, or end up getting fuzzier and fuzzier. Wars since Napoleon, okay, have been unpredictable. you see.
Well, in so, Napoleon, a lot of Napoleon had a real impact on the world, even though he wound up losing the wars.
Of course, but the duration of wars, the consequences of wars, and sometimes you can win a war and not know what happened to you. So Iraq is not. I mean, conflicts when they're large scale, complicated, far away, in a different culture with more feedback loops, what I call feedback loops. These conflicts are so unpredictable that you should try to avoid stirring a complex pot.
Now, you argue, paradoxically, that we should focus on what we don't know instead of what we do know. Well, how is that even possible? And what would George Santayana have said to that?
Okay. My idea is very simple. The Black Swan is a book that is trying to move away from what I call philosophy into plain and simple guidelines of how not to be a turkey, you know, how not to be taken for a ride, and so I'm half the time a scientist, philosopher, half the time I'm a businessman. I was a trader for a long time, so I had this idea of not to be a sucker. In other words, when you play poker, you will need to know who's a sucker and not to be a sucker. So it's very small little rules. So where do we tend to be suckers? We tend to be suckers in socioeconomic variables. We listen to experts who are not experts, okay? A brain surgeon is an expert, okay? Someone who makes a souffle is going to be an expert at souffles. It's visible, it's certain, it's incontrovertible.
But TV, but now someone, political pundits are not, exactly, and people who tell you what's going to happen in the stock market.
Exactly. The problem is that if you listen about stock forecast, economic forecast coming from a cab driver, okay, it's going to just do the therapy that you need, but you're not going to rely on it for large-scale decisions. But if you listen to economists, and these people have the same track record as cab drivers, you see. So that's the problem. And these are pseudo-experts that are very dangerous to society, who produce forecasts for 25 years down the road, and we rely on them, and we should not. And this is what my book is about, is how to avoid getting taken for a ride, being taken for a ride.
My guess is Nassim Nicholas Taleb, who's currently taking a break by serving as the Dean's Professor in the Sciences of Uncertainty at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, a former stockbroker. He has written a book called The Black Swan, The Impact of the Highly Improbable, published by Random House. You also say that reading newspapers actually decreases our knowledge of the world. You claim you stopped reading them altogether?
Yeah, well, I stopped in the 80s.
How can we be well-informed if we don't read the newspapers?
First of all, the information you get is neither necessary. And the problem is the more information you get, information is never neutral. Whenever you get a piece of information, you concoct a theory. You see, so if you get a lot of information, that you're going to produce a lot of theories. And once you have a theory in your head, it's very hard to dislodge it.
So it's better to read the New York Post and the New York Times because
it's much better to get the gossip. Better. I mean, the rules are as follows: get as much gossip as you can because you need it, and it doesn't hurt you. Don't read the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. Try to read something. If you have to get information, get it weekly.
So and, now, what would you suggest to somebody who wants to invest money? Not to do it? Or?
Well, let me tell you, the biggest problem I have with investments is that I see people who are so cautious in their daily lives. They lock the door before going to bed. They worry about insurance on their house, and then they give their money to some fool, all right? And thinking, well, that's the problem for experts. We're gullible in some domains, and just I'm trying to reverse. I'm going to tell them be more relaxed about the burglaries, okay, and be a little more cautious about giving your money to someone who doesn't have an empirical track record. Uh-huh. The problem is that it has this has been the mark of the former expert. Human gullibility is a permanent thing. We've always been suckers for astrologists, for people like that, and now we're suckers for economists.
Well, I remember reading about, I don't know if it actually panned out to be true, that people would stick pins in the financial pages and then invest in that, and they did just as well as if they followed all of the rules.
You would do better because you don't have transaction costs. You're not paying the expert, and it costs a lot of money.
There are many personal anecdotes throughout this book, including ones about your childhood in Lebanon. How do you think growing up in the conflict at that time affected your outlook on things?
It made me a little more skeptical about human nature because every day new events were taking place that would have deemed completely crazy on the day before. But what I found interesting is not that history was crazy, was that people thought after the fact that these events were predictable when they were not before the fact. So there's something about human nature that makes us think that black swans okay, were predictable after the fact. Although, say, if September 11, okay, if you spoke, if I were sitting here, okay, describing on September 10th what was going to happen, you would have definitely called an ambulance. All right.
Well, I might have said that that's possible, but we'll see on the 12th.
Okay, no, but most people would have said it's completely inconceivable, right? So, but the problem is that after the fact, okay, we tend to think that events are more predictable than they were, and it's been a story. And I think the big discovery I made was looking at adults. I was a child. Looking at adults, try to convince themselves that they understood what was going on, when in fact they did not.
You write that the bell curve, which is a standard in statistics and economics, is fundamentally useless. Useless?
Not useless, right? Completely useless. It's good in some domains. It's good in domains that are called Mediocristan. Not a single day will Mediocristan is a domain in which the impact of the exception is not going to be monstrous. Not a single day is going to make me thin.
Mm-hmm.
But once in a second,
would you mark
poor.
As a teacher? Would you mark on a bell curve at least?
I try not to mark, but you can do that. Yes, in school it could be used for height, weight, and some things, but you can't use it for variable that depend on an exception.
So why do we persist in using models like these if they don't really prove anything?
Therapy. Most to convince ourselves that we understand the world. We don't understand the world, okay? If you read the newspaper, you see explanations. You know these explanations are bogus, okay? But we still read it. Why? Because we can't live without we've got to give ourselves the illusion of understanding what's going on.
Well, I can go along with that, but then you say things that are so counterintuitive, like we shouldn't run for the train if we're late.
Yeah, but that's because the problem about the way I control randomness in my own life is by focusing on my own behavior, not focusing on results. Focus on elegance in the way I execute my behavior. So the idea is not to win or lose because I can't control that. The idea is not to do well or do poorly. The idea is how I behave because that I would always control how I behave. So not to run for a train, it makes you a winner no matter what happens, you see.
You give an example of a fictional author, Yevgenia Nikolaevna, who writes a groundbreaking novel that integrates scientific theories with autobiographical commentary. And I wonder how much that's autobiographical, though you made it into a Russian woman.
Yeah, it's true, but also some of her temperamental attributes are also so autobiographical. Nobody noticed. You're the first to notice. Thank you for that.
Well, in the end, she's right. Where would you put that book in a bookstore?
My book, I had a problem with my book. I'm glad Barnes & Noble put it in the science section and Borders put it in the investment section and Waterstone in the UK put it in the philosophy section. So in a way, I think these divisions between disciplines are pretty much what irritate me in the book.
Although there seems to be a new genre with books like Blink and Freakonomics in this book, and perhaps they should create a new section altogether. But you mentioned in the book that it's a work of science, yet it really is also a personal essay.
It is, I mean, I consider myself more of a belletrist than a thinker for one reason. I discovered that there's not a single idea I've had in my life that someone else. Okay, I mean, some Socrates. I mean, this is a footnote on Socrates.
Well, they say all philosophical ideas were pre-Socratic, so everything else is a variation.
It's a variation. So I just realized that I don't want to claim originality of thought, although a lot of the ideas came independently. So I have 1,200 references, but I'd rather what I claim, what is going to be different, that I'm sure that a lot of the ideas that I didn't attribute to other people were effectively discovered by someone, but we don't have the record. But what is authentic is my style. So I have a very idiosyncratic style. I had a rough time in the beginning with my previous book, finding a publisher, because of my style. I don't like to be edited. I have a mixed fiction and because I think when I have a fictional character, it's not a lie. When you have a narrative nonfiction, it's a lie because you sort of invent things about characters that are not adequate.
But obviously what you're really interested in doing is stirring things up, being a provocateur to some degree.
No, not at all.
Challenging conventional wisdom.
Not at all. This is a solution. Here I'm proposing a solution.
To ignore everything?
Not to ignore everything. To ignore the things that are a fraud, okay? I mean, look at it. Medicine, until well into the 20th century, okay, killed more people than it cured, okay? someone writing about, I mean, I'm doing the same thing. I'm writing.
But you're
about
saying now medicine is okay.
It's a lot better. It's a lot better. Okay, economics is what medicine was in the 15th century. Okay, social political science has the same. I mean, anything that has named science, like social science, cognitive science, all these, was still in the 15th century. You see, and you can see it. Okay, if the FDA managed Wall Street, okay, the Food and Drugs Administration, it put a lot of people in jail.
Well, not this FDA, but previous FDAs. Anyway, I predict that this FDA will do everything possible to not prosecute anyone. But that's another matter. You know, that's another thing we couldn't predict either. When a person runs for office, he or she usually makes all sorts of promises, and then the only thing that we can be sure of is that they're not going to be kept.
Yeah, it's true, but it there's something different in formulating predictions. The fact that there's nothing wrong in making a prediction if it's harmful. Okay, there's something wrong if you are predicting in domains where you have a huge error rate, hiding your error rate from yourself and from others, and at the same time harming projections and hurting people.
Well, I know that whenever people ask me, who do you think is going to be the next president, I say I don't make predictions. But I think generally the day before the election, I can make a decent prediction.
It is, you know, predicting a president, I think collectively we do okay in that domain. It's predicting stock market variables, predicting technology, predicting these things that we are poor.
And that's why we had the dot-com bubble and all sorts of other problems.
We're horrible in these fields.
The book that I predict you will find fascinating is called The Black Swan, The Impact of the Highly Improbable. It is published by Random House. And my great thanks to Nassim Nicholas Taleb, who is now Dean's Professor in the Science of Uncertainty at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, for being on our show today. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.